This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to our ongoing coverage of Malaysia Terbaru. You're with Roshan and Xiaoning. Now, for more analysis, we speak to Kelvin Cheng, economist, economics, trade and regional integration analysis at the Institute for Strategy and International Studies, otherwise known as ISIS Malaysia. So, Kelvin, welcome to the show. What's your GDP forecast and risks ahead now that all of this has happened?
Thank you. So, in terms of GDP forecast, in my personal view, I'm looking about 4% to 4.3% in 2020. But this, of course, heavily hinges on how the COVID-19 and trade war story develops. And particularly, these growth forecasts assume a more V-shaped recovery on the COVID-19 front, which, as we know, is looking increasingly unlikely. So recently, I think that we've seen that the COVID-19 situation around the world has evolved much more intensely than initially expected. And we've seen that supply chain disruption has been quite severe. As such, locally, you know, our informed guesswork of GDP growth will depend on the degree to which the COVID-19 negative impacts will remain concentrated in the external-facing sectors like tourism and manufacturing. So the more we start to see this COVID-19 impact meaningfully filter through into other parts of the economy and eventually severely dampening private consumption, then we could really be in a spot of trouble. And that is more likely to happen if the already announced stimulus package gets delayed or scaled down in some manner. And on the trade front, in my view, the phase one deal we got in December between the US and China has not done too much to actually alleviate the adverse impacts of tariffs. In fact, it might make things worse, but that's the backdrop that we're dealing with right now.
And Kelvin, what do you think should be this new government's priorities on the economic front?
Well, the political situation right now is still very uncertain, and I will refrain, of course, from commenting at all about political developments happening right now. I'll, of course, leave that to the political science experts and analysts. But it's important for us to remember that no matter what the politics look like, the economic priorities for Malaysia would and should remain the same. And what I mean is that in terms of economic policy, we have, you know, to work with calm and rational heads. You know, good economics has to prevail, and the Malaysian economy and the Malaysian people come first. So if we're talking priorities, I will say this, in that economic policy has to continue to work towards economic growth and prosperity and the continued development of the Malaysian economy. Economic policy has to continue to work towards moving the Malaysian economy into the ranks of industrialized countries in terms of things like national income, infrastructure, technology, and human capital. And maybe perhaps above everything, the most important thing, right, is that Malaysia's economic priority should be to continue to steadily raise the quality of life and standard of living of the rakyat as a whole, you know, year after year, not just now, but in the decades to come. And in my view, that should be the ultimate priority for any national government, politics aside.
So, Kelvin, do you have any specific examples to elaborate your view here?
Overall, I think that a continuation of the good work that both administrations have done over the past decades would be a good thing. So the key thing for the shorter term would be, you know, to maintain economic growth in Malaysia, you know, amid a very turbulent and uncertain global and domestic environment. So we know from the research that recessions are very painful and disproportionately so for the most vulnerable and disadvantaged groups like minorities, youth and the lower skilled worker. So this is really the key short-term consideration here to maintain economic growth. And in the longer term, I think that economic policy should continue to focus on improving productivity in terms of increasing the level of human capital of our workers, but also in terms of increasing the competitiveness and complexity of our local industry and continue to move up the value chain. And some examples here would be to continue to work in attracting high-value-added foreign investments using targeted tax measures. And this is key, right? Actually capturing the benefits of foreign investment and upgrading the level of technology and capability of local firms. At the same time, as, you know, major economic growth continues to progress, policymakers should be, you know, cognizant that the spoils of this growth need to be spread widely, right? So what this means in terms of priorities is that we need to continue to deepen the social safety net to protect workers and the disadvantaged and vulnerable groups. And here I'm talking about things like unemployment assistance, like the EIS and social assistance transfers, like Bantuan Sara Hidup.
And Kelvin, you know, like you said, the economy is going, can go, be, you know, expected to go through a bit of a weak patch. So far we've had the stimulus package announced. Is that sufficient? Do you see gaps actually?
Well, in my view, the proposed stimulus package was broadly sufficient. And in fact, it actually ended up being a little larger in size than I initially expected, which I guess is a good thing. So my personal view is that it is, you know, pretty well designed with very well-rounded focus areas, in that it uses a multitude of different mechanisms and measures to stimulate the economy and to alleviate the pressure on the rakyat. So in terms of large stimulus packages, as far as they go, generally, you know, you want to see that it has both a short-term component, aka like spending measures to boost demand, instill confidence, to prevent, you know, a downward spiral, in combination with a long-term components. So these are measures that do not immediately help to lift demand in the near term, but will bear fruit in the longer run, you know, in terms of increasing the level of productivity in the economy. And these are things like, in the proposed stimulus package, these are things like measures for infrastructure building, incentivizing private business investment, and incentivizing human capital investment. And then what's good about this stimulus package is that you also got a combo of fiscal/economic measures in terms of tax credits, grants, and income support, along with monetary financial measures, you know, to grease the wheels of the financial system, so to speak, to, you know, increase liquidity and flow of funds to firms and SMEs. And here I'm talking about the provisions for financial relief for microcredit, you know, for bank lending, for SMEs and micro enterprises. And just one more thing, the last thing is that another good thing about the package is that it helps to balance some equity versus growth concerns by expanding and strengthening automatic stabilizers, like I mentioned previously, like the Bantuan Sara Hidup Cash Transfer Program and the Employment Insurance Scheme Unemployment Assistance Program. And what I mean when I call things like DSH and EIS automatic stabilizers is that they kick in automatically, right? So when the economy slows down, more people lose their jobs. So EIS automatically kicks in to provide an automatic mini stimulus, so to speak, which kicks in even before Cabinet decides to react. But just to go back to your question, in terms of gaps, the only thing I can think of is that it could have gone even further in this regard by increasing the DSH transfer amount by more and for longer, perhaps permanently, and by increasing the amount under the EIS job search allowance as well.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us on the line today, Kelvin.
Thank you so much.
That was Kelvin Chang, analyst for economics, trade and regional integration at ICIS Malaysia. And I think the most important thing here is bringing it back to the economy. It's even before all this political upheaval happened, we were in the middle of the COVID-19 virus outbreak, which was doing damage across the region outside, not even talking about Malaysia. And we saw the stimulus package come out midweek. So it's going to be really important to see how this new government responds in an economic perspective.
Yeah, I think we also cannot deny that, you know, for the last 1 week, I think the country, for most of us, we've been almost, I think, paralyzed by the political developments. Everybody's been transfixed by what's happening and following the news closely. But for a lot of us, life still goes on, right? We still have issues like how do we pay our bills? You know, most people still want to buy a home, get better paid jobs, paying for our children's education. Those concerns continue. And so, you know, we do need to know what the economic priorities of this government are. That's paramount.
Yeah, now looking back to Trisha of Ideas, her call earlier, talking about how the different perspectives and on an economic point of view from Tan Sri Muhyiddin and say, like the one of the components that are being passed looking at more social welfare, whereas Tan Sri Muhyiddin being more of a establishment politician could be looking at more economic growth. So it's going to be very interesting to see how they balance that out going forward, especially when their new cabinet is formed. But right now we're going into a few messages, and to take you there, we've got St. Vincent. We've got Cruel by St. Vincent. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.